And Jeremy, I think what you've got there is a Premonti Brothers sandwich there in Pittsburgh. So we want a full report later on in the day. Well, to a somber anniversary now. 30 years ago today, a disastrous chain reaction in the core of reactor number 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear plant in Ukraine. The government not reporting for nearly 3 days. Here's how it sounded on NPR.
The Soviet government reports an accident at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in the Ukraine.
Well, today, Ukraine's president led a ceremony commemorating the disaster, in which thousands died, thousands more evacuated, and millions exposed to dangerous levels of radiation. Very few people were allowed back in the massive exclusion zone. Then in 2011, authorities opened up parts to scientists and journalists. Henry Schuckman was among the first to head inside, and we spoke to him then about his reporting for Outside Magazine.
Above all, I'd say it was pretty eerie. When they created this exclusion zone after the accident, in which they expelled everybody who lived there, basically, for an area of about 1,600 square miles, what happened was that when the people left and all the domestic animals also left, as well as all the animal species that live around human beings, like pigeons and rats and house mice and so on, when all of that population of people and animals left, the area was then sort of left vacant for a wild ecosystem, wild fauna, to reestablish. Hundreds of wolves, thousands of deer and elk and wild boar, bison. It sort of reverted to almost sort of medieval natural state.
Give us a sense of what it was like to go into it.
Yeah, well, there's a deserted city. It's called Pripyat. And it was a small city, 50,000 people. But now it is completely overrun by birch trees. The main avenues, the streets, are so thickly forested with birch trees that actually I didn't even realize that there were apartment buildings about 25 yards from me until I had a proper look. You know, and sure enough, these buildings, these old concrete Soviet-style apartment blocks, you know, all their terraces have got birch trees growing in them. The balconies have birch trees growing in them. Some of them are crumbling. Trees aren't very good for buildings when they're growing on them. And even where nature is so abundant, you know, because all the farmland has become forest, basically, you'd sort of think it might be beautiful and wonderful and whatever, but it's creepy. It's something very eerie about it. It's a sort of poisoned Eden.
Well, tell us about the poison part. You remind us of the cleanup effort. The most contaminated villages bulldozed and buried. Trees were planted to sort of bind the radioactivity into the soil. But still, how much radioactivity is there?
It's very hard to be sure. There's some parts that have been very thoroughly cleaned up. In fact, the Soviets, this happened during just towards the end of Soviet times. And they drafted in 650,000 people for this cleanup operation. The result is that, yes, there's large parts of the zone, the exclusion zone, where you can fairly safely walk around and be driven around. But it's very unpredictable. I mean, for example, in a deserted fairground in this abandoned city, our guide, you know, I was about to step in in a certain direction. He said, stop. You see that moss down there? There was a patch of moss, maybe 6 feet across or something. He said, don't walk on that. It's highly radioactive. I mean, you know, it was really very unpredictable. It varies from, you know, yard to yard. And that's actually the way that radioactivity travels. You know, you can clean up a whole area. But if any of the dust has been picked up by evaporation and become cloud, and then wherever the rain falls is going to be radioactive.
Well, but what is it doing to the animals who are still there and the birds? Professors from the University of South Carolina and the University of Paris did a study. They found significantly fewer insects, mammals, and birds, and many of the animals with deformities, birds with 5% smaller brains and other kinds of deformities. Now, you say the place is teeming with wildlife. How is the radioactivity affecting them?
There has been quite a bit of research now showing that even though they seem to be thriving, there's genetic damage happening. And as you say, there's a lot of mutation. There are swallows where the population is 20% albino, which is, you know, shouldn't be happening at all. There's albinism and there's asymmetry of feathers. So the thing is really that it appears to be a thriving wildlife refuge, but there are all kinds of problems in the genetic stability.
And what about the people? Farmers who quietly move back onto their farms after all and just tolerated by the government?
If anything, that was the most extraordinary thing, is that there are a few hundred peasant farmers, as you say, who have returned to their farms. And in fact, some of them did fairly soon after they were evicted back in 1986 and have been living there for, whatever, nearly 25 years, apparently, on the whole, with no adverse health. The cancer rate among that population is very slightly higher than in the rest of Ukraine, but it's such a small population that it's not really significant. They feel that they're living in a very healthy place. And these people, they're eating food out of the soil, they're grown out of the soil there, they're drinking the water, they're entirely sort of immersed in that contaminated landscape, and they don't seem to be suffering terribly, not like the families and descendants of the people who worked in the cleanup operation. 2.7 million people in the Ukraine and Belarus and Russia have suffered terribly from the Chernobyl disaster.
Henry Shukman, who visited the Chernobyl exclusion zone in 2011 when it was first opened up and reported for Outside Magazine. Today is the 30th anniversary of that disaster.